Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A few weeks ago, WOSU News Director Mike Thompson asked two Ohio members of Congress whether they favored efforts to change how congressional districts are mapped in the Buckeye State. Republican Pat Tiberi, whose party is in the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives and by far in the majority in Ohio, said he supports change. Democrat Joyce Beatty was more circumspect.
Yes and no.
That ain't good enough.
Well, let me answer it this way, and I'll be brief. Your question has to fit my answer. And so my answer is yes, depending, no, if not.
And that's part of the reason why navigating change in the congressional redistricting process is touchy. Even the minority party, which holds only 4 of the 16 congressional seats in Ohio, has a certain comfort level with the status quo. Joining us is election law expert and Ohio State University law professor Daniel Takagi. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, in the spirit of full disclosure, obviously you support reform on this score.
I do. I support reform. The good news, I suppose, is that we've had some when it comes to state legislative redistricting, mm-hmm. but congressional redistricting remains a really tough nut to crack here in Ohio.
Listeners, we invited Ohio Representative Steve Stivers and Pat Tiberi. Neither was available to join us. We also invited the Republican Speaker of the Ohio House, Cliff Rosenberger. He was unavailable. And we also invited Ohio Senate President Larry Obhoff and issued an open invitation to Republican state lawmakers. None responded. So, Daniel Takagi, change is hard. Why would Joyce Beatty not want change that could benefit her party?
Yeah. So let me start by talking about the last part first, about why this would benefit not only the Democratic Party, but the people of Ohio as a whole. Redistricting can be a complicated issue, or at least seem like a complicated issue to so many people, because not many people spend a lot of time paying attention to how these lines get drawn that determine how our democracy works. And the way that district lines are drawn affects everything, whatever it is you care about, whether it's schools, whether it's abortion and choice, whether it's immigration, whether it's firearms, whether it's taxes. All of these things are affected and sometimes even determined by the way district lines are drawn. They affect every single issue we care about. And we're here in a state that's about as purple as they come, right? We're roughly evenly split between Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
A few more Republicans in off-year elections at least come out to vote than Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at our congressional delegation. It is 3/4 Republican and only 1/4 Democrat. There are 12 Republicans and only 4 Democrats. And as we were discussing just a moment ago, Ann, the closest congressional race in this last cycle, the two candidates were separated by 20 points, 60 to 40. We didn't have any competitive congressional races. And so, you know, you go to your question, why would Democrats, because they're in the minority, why would they not vigorously support change? Well, part of the reason is that the people who occupy these seats, without naming names, they don't have much of an interest in changing things. If you're winning elections by a 60-point or a 40-point margin, you don't want to change the way that your districts are drawn. So both Republican and Democratic politicians benefit from the system, but not the people.
Okay. So, but in 2010, Democrats had a chance to take the politics out of drawing new congressional boundaries. Republican members of the legislature supported it. Most daily newspapers and good government groups strongly supported it. The Democrats killed it. Why?
Well, I think there was probably some not so good strategery going on the part of Democrats. But look, for people who are elected to office, even if it means their party is going to be in the minority, they're not necessarily always going to be in favor of reform either, right? If, for example, and I hate to call anybody out because I don't want to suggest that it's a personal as opposed to a systemic issue, but if you're going to be running in a district that's 80% Democratic, why would you want to change things, right? You can be pretty confident that you're going to be reelected as a Democrat running in an 80% Democratic district, even though it may not be good for your party or for the people.
The issue is spreading those Democrats and Republicans more evenly so districts are more competitive. But Joyce Beatty does have some genuine concerns about people of color and what they'll lose out at the ballot box if there aren't certain things put in place. I mean, there are laws or court rulings that govern the makeup of a congressional district, right?
Yeah, and the Voting Rights Act, the Federal Voting Rights Act, of which I am a strong supporter, prohibits the denial or the dilution of minority votes. And it's very important that the Voting Rights Act be vigorously enforced. But frankly, more often than not, the Voting Rights Act these days gets used as an excuse for gerrymandering, and usually by Republicans. They say we had to draw this district, like the 11th Congressional District, which goes all the way from Cleveland to Akron. I call it the LeBron James District. It's 51% African American, 80% Democratic. Well, nothing in the Voting Rights Act required you to draw a district that's 51 or 53% African American. It is not only possible, but not difficult for an African American to get elected to Congress from Cleveland with a district that is substantially less than 50% African American. I mean, look at Joyce Beatty's district. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 33% African American, and yet she has won office quite handily in that office. So it's just a myth that you have to draw a majority black district in order to elect African Americans to office. At least here in Ohio, it can be different in some other parts of the country, especially the South.
And that's why these kinds of laws need to be state by state.
It's why the enforcement of the law is state by state.
Because so, states differ so much.
You know,
in
some parts of Texas, for example, you may need to draw a district that is 51% Latino in terms of its voting age population in order for a Latino to get elected to office. But here in Ohio, you don't need to draw a district that's 51% African American in order for an African American candidate to get elected to office.
When they draw – so the census comes out every 10 years.
Yeah.
And then the data from that goes to the redistricting board or commission. Is it a redistricting board? When they look at that data, what are they looking at? What are they supposed to be looking at, and what else are they looking at?
So for our state legislative redistricting, it's a board that has that draws the state House districts and the state Senate districts. For congressional districts, they're actually drawn through a bill that's like any other piece of legislation passed by the state legislature, by both chambers of the state legislature, and signed by the governor. In this election cycle, the last redistricting cycle, I should say, as in the previous one, Republicans were in control, right? They controlled both houses of the state legislature back in 2011 when the district lines were drawn, and also, of course, Governor Kasich was in office. And they have a lot of information. In fact, you know, when some Public Records Act requests were submitted trying to find out what exactly happened, it turned out there was – this is no joke. I know it sounds like fiction, but sometimes truth is stranger than. There was actually a hotel room a block away from the state capitol building at the DoubleTree Inn, which was referred to in email as the bunker. And this is where all the real work went down. There were public hearings, of course, but all the real work was done behind closed doors. And they have all sorts of data. They can predict very reliably how people are going to vote. And this is not just an Ohio story.
Yeah.
This is going on all over the country where there's fine-grained data that can allow those drawing the lines to predict with meticulous accuracy exactly how these districts are going to vote when they're drawn.
Why did it turn out that there's a redistricting board for legislative districts and the legislature controls the process, such as it is,
yeah,
for congressional districts.
Yeah. Well, so this is a process that we've actually had with us for a long time, mm-hmm, right, where you've got a board. It has been a 5-member board. It's going to be a 7-member board for the next redistricting cycle.
For legislative districts, yeah.
And I think a part of the idea here was that we ought not have people draw in their own districts, right? So the state legislature doesn't draw legislative districts. It is instead this board, which up until the next cycle has consisted of 3 elected officials, the governor, the secretary of state, and the auditor, as well as basically someone from each side chosen by the leadership in the state legislature. The idea behind this is so the state legislature won't itself be drawing the lines. On the other hand, with respect to congressional districts, well, the state legislature is drawing congressional districts, but at least there the idea is they're not drawing their own lines. But the reality is, as you can imagine, this is an intensely partisan process. Each side is looking out for its own interests. And the way it's worked for the last several redistricting cycles is that the party that holds the redistricting pen draws districts to serve their own party's interests, the interests of their political cronies.
That's why sometimes people wonder, who cares who's state auditor? Well, the parties care who's state auditor.
Yeah.
Specifically, or primarily, because of redistricting.
I think that
the redistricting board.
That's exactly right.
Otherwise, yeah, you know, again, it's a monkey move up thing. It's an opportunity to get your name on a statewide ballot. But what the parties really care about is who's on that redistricting board.
Well, that's right. I mean, let me be very clear. The job of state auditor is a really important job. They
absolutely
do really important things.
Yes.
But why do the parties care about it as much as they do? It is mainly because that's one of the seats that will determine who has a majority on the redistricting board and therefore who will control power in this state for the next 10 years, because ultimately redistricting is about power.
And as far as congressional districts are drawn, right now it's by the Ohio General Assembly.
Yeah.
They by law have control of that process. Mm-hmm. The proposals, and we're going to get into more of the proposal that's being prepared to be go on the ballot. I know there's a few more, several more steps to before it makes it, but it would largely mirror what voters approved in 2015, yeah, and it would take the power away from the Ohio General Assembly and create something like the board that exists for legislative districts.
Yeah, that's my understanding. I haven't been involved in the latest round, mm-hmm, and the latest redistricting proposal. But look, the good news is, as I mentioned earlier, Anne, is for our state legislative redistricting, we'll actually have a significantly better process in 2021 than we've had in previous cycles, where to draw a plan that will remain in effect for the full decade, there will have to be at least some degree of bipartisan consensus. And my understanding of the congressional redistricting proposal is that it would take that model and apply it to congressional districts. Not a perfect plan, but one that would be a significant improvement over what we have now, where, in effect, the majority party dominates completely.
We're talking about congressional redistricting. I mentioned a couple times, Ohio voters already have approved a plan to change how state legislative districts are drawn in Ohio. That plan will start going into effect in a couple of years. It was passed in 2015, but you have to wait to the next census before it goes into effect. Now, a bipartisan coalition is gathering signatures to put basically the same idea on the ballot again for Ohio voters. Previously, the legislature, I think, had removed or it had been removed from the previous ballot initiative. If you have a question or comment about how congressional districts are drawn in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Daniel Tokaji. He's an election law expert and Ohio State University law professor. Coming up, we're going to hear from the state chair of Common Cause Ohio. That's one of the groups that has put forth this proposal. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about redistricting reform. A coalition is formed to get a ballot issue before voters that would reduce the power of the political party in control to draw congressional districts to its benefit. Ohio is roughly 50-50 when it comes to Republicans and Democrats. Yet, Republicans control 12 of 16 congressional seats. And in the last election cycle, none of those races was within 19 percentage points. 14 of the contests were decided by at least 30 percentage points. Incumbents won in every case. Still with us is election law expert and Ohio State University law professor Daniel Tokaji. Dan, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Also joining us now is State Chair of Common Cause Ohio, Sam Gresham.
Welcome back, Sam. Thank you, Ann, for having me.
And listeners, we did invite Ohio Representative Steve Stivers and Pat Tiberi. Neither was available to join us. We also invited the Speaker of the Ohio House, Cliff Rosenberger. He was unavailable. We also invited Ohio Senate President Larry Abhoff and issued an open invitation to Republican state lawmakers through their media people. None responded to our request. So I'm sorry about that. But if you have any questions about redistricting, I know it's feels sort of in the weeds. It feels not very sexy, but it is absolutely fundamental to understanding the balance of power in the state of Ohio as it stands today and as it stood 30 years ago. But, you know, Dan Tokaji, before we move on, Ohio wasn't this gerrymandered when I first came to the state 30 years ago and started covering the Ohio General Assembly. I mean, it was gerrymandered. They did monkey with it and make it beneficial to one party or the other, whoever was in control. But what changed? Why did it get so extraordinarily unbalanced?
So there are actually a couple of things that have changed, Dan. One is something that actually is related but distinct, is that people – we've gotten more segregated, right?
We've moved to different places.
Right. Yeah. That urban areas have become more intensely blue and rural areas have become more intensely red. So part of this is just where people live, right? We are segregated to a large extent by party. But it's not just your imagination, right? The gerrymandering really has gotten worse, especially in the last redistricting cycle, and not just in Ohio, but across the country. Yeah. You'll see especially where Republicans held the pen. You had a guest in a few months ago who talked about this. They were incredibly sophisticated in terms of not only maximizing the number of seats through the redistricting process and therefore their power, but drawing maps that would be foolproof in the sense that they will preserve Republican majorities even in very strong Democratic years. So it's a kind of firewall that Republicans have especially built to protect themselves from political competition.
It could easily have been the Democrats who did this. It happened to be the Republicans. Yeah. And what they did was they started to focus national money on statewide races to change the makeup or to ensure the makeup, in some cases in Ohio, to favor Republicans.
That was true.
But Sam Gresham easily could have been Democrats. Right. I mean, anyone could have picked up on this and realized that's where the money needed to go.
To support Dan's proposition, it was a concerted effort in 2010 to put districts together that favored Republicans. Now, the other thing they found technology that really helped them create these districts where before you eyeballed it, where the technology allowed them to know specifically where people live. If you take an example of a district that we have, there's nowhere in the world you could have eyeballed this. And that's the 9th district, the snake along the lake.
Yeah.
There's nowhere in the world you could have done that without technology because how close the people are in the district. And then the other one is the 6th district, which goes all the way from Mahoney County all the way to Scioto County. How do you have a congressional district that goes from Mahoney all the way to Scioto County? And if you look at the 3rd district in Franklin County versus the 12th, I mean, there's so many districts. If you look down at this map and say, this is a Rorschach test. What were they thinking when they put this thing together? And you would have to conclude that they were skillfully creating districts that work for one political party versus the other. So I think technology, intent, but I also think the Democrats slept it. I think the Democrats were not prepared, and they slept this whole process. And I think that's one reason we have such gerrymandering now.
Now, we currently have an out-of-date congressional map up on our website, but if folks want to at least check that out, you can see the snake along the lake that Sam Gresham is talking about. It's in yellow, and I'm going to try to get an updated congressional district map up as soon as possible so that people can see what things really look like. It's pretty simple. I mean, there's 16 districts now in the state of Ohio, fewer than ever, and with fewer options than ever. Tell us, Sam Gresham, about what the proposal that will, you know, that I know that the language still has to be approved by the Attorney General's office, right? Mm-hmm. What's going before him? He has 10 days to do that.
It is true that the Attorney General, but there's a component in his office that is very important. It's called a ballot board. He will approve the language initially, and then the ballot board will approve the language that will go on the ballot. Believe it or not, that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. But what's going to go on the ballot, the Ohio Redistricting Commission consists of the governor, secretary of state, the auditor, and one person appointed by the Ohio House and the Senate minority and or majority. No member of Congress may serve as a commissioner. Now, the point is, the last time we attempted to do this, and Dan was a part of it, we tried to create an independent commission outside of the political process, and it got complicated. People missed it and didn't understand. This time, we are taking the people who traditionally do it, but we've given them a set of rules. And the first rule is no congressional district may be drawn to favor or disfavor a political party. Now, that is very important.
It is important, but who decides that?
The districts, the people who draw the district will decide that. But now, you need to know, there's nowhere in the world we're going to get fairness until we sue them. When the commission puts its first map together, we're probably going to have to sue them. We can submit our maps to the process. There are all public hearings that have to be held, and a rationale for the districts have to be put forward. It is the best process that we could come up with. So let's assume they're going to put their map together that favors to the degree that they can. But we are going to go back and fight the rules. Each district should be nearly equal in population. The plan shall minimize the splitting of counties, municipalities, and townships. The Voting Rights Act and other state federal laws that protect minorities' representation must be respected. Representation fairness is required. This means that the statewide percentage of districts leaning towards each of the two major parties shall closely correspond to the partisan preference of the Ohio voters as measured by a statewide proportion of voters in the state and federal partisan statewide.
Okay, yeah, you're losing people.
I know.
Give
it's
us the
weeds. It's the weeds, yeah.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, the weeds in this case are the most important thing.
Right.
Because somebody's going to have to force them to do what's necessary.
Dan made the salient point earlier that a big reason, there's two big reasons, is gerrymandering, mm-hmm. why we're in this situation where we have 12 of 16 congressional seats controlled by Republicans in a state that's 50-50 Democrat-Republican. One of them's gerrymandering. The other one is where people live.
Right.
How do you check for that? I mean, it reflects another reality about Ohio.
It does reflect another reality about Ohio. But we, over the last 2 years, have conducted trials and competition on drawing maps across the state of Ohio from a partisan perspective and a nonpartisan perspective. And in those contests, we found people who could draw maps that created balance in both the urban and rural community. So it's possible.
And I think, Ann, what you see is that even though there is some degree of natural concentration of Democrats in some areas, Republicans in others, the degree of imbalance and lack of competitiveness, where you don't have a single competitive congressional election in any of our 16 districts. That is a function of the way that district lines have been manipulated. And if you don't have competitive elections, if not a single incumbent has to worry about being voted out of office no matter what they do, then you have no accountability and you don't really have an effective democracy.
Why does that lead to the polarization in Congress? How does that happen?
Because people live in districts that they don't have to worry about it. There's nobody on the left or the right who opposes their position, so they can do what the right or the left wants them to do, and they're going to be safely reelected. I mean, we can take the 3rd Congressional District for an example. If you look at the index of the 3rd Congressional District, as it is loaded up with Democrats and it has loaded up with black folk, the person who can go in that district has a pretty good chance of being reelected without any major problem. If you look at Pat Tiberi's district, if you look at Stiver's districts, those districts were drawn specifically for people's reference, 12th and the 15th, were drawn specifically to take the black community out. They were drawn specifically to take Columbus out of the effect on the 12th and 15th districts. So Dan's point is right. There is a rationale for why these people do it, and it's primarily to protect the incumbent.
And I'm glad you brought up the subject of political polarization, Ann, because in my view, this is one of the most serious problems that threatens the very survival of our democracy. We just don't have very many people in the middle. Republicans have become more conservative. Democrats have become more liberal.
But most Americans don't identify that way. They identify more in the middle.
Well, they're more in the middle than is reflected in the state legislature. But it's not just our elected officials who have become more polarized over the years. We, the people, have become more polarized, too, over the years. And especially we've sorted ourselves into parties where, at least among active voters, there are fewer moderates than there used to be. This is partly a reflection of the political system, and it would be an exaggeration to say that redistricting is the sole or even the main cause of all this. But if we had more moderate districts that were roughly 50-50, then we would at least possibly have some critical mass of moderate legislators in Congress that could help us forge some compromises on the issues that divide us.
This issue is important, and it has two other components we haven't talked about. One other component we haven't talked about. We've talked about gerrymandering. But the amount of money and how people get their money to run for office is the other factor that affects us. If we can get fair districts and take the money out of running for an election in this country, we would have a whole political different setting. Now, Dan raises another point, but I think his point is bolstered again by money. They try and segregate people into districts, whether left or right, based on their ability to win. And they create these districts that allow them to win. Now, his point about polarization is true. But I don't think it is as polarized as it appears.
Or what came first, the chicken or the egg?
I think the polarization came as a result of political parties saying to their candidates,
win the primary at any cost. And
then we'll win the general easily. There's no point. But there's another point to that. The Republicans for a while, the Tea Party group, made promises to the Tea Party and Tea Party-like people that they never could deliver on. They just wanted their votes. And now those people are so polarized with regards to how they feel about government. Their biggest complaint is you never do anything you said you were going to do. And that's why we have a president now who's committed to it. But they never intended to do anything that those people had asked for.
Just one more point on polarization, Ann. You know, you asked what the ultimate causes were, and or are. And one of the things that's most interesting, if you look at the social science literature on this, is that over the last four decades, we've had this striking increase in political polarization. At the same time, we've also had this dramatic increase in economic inequality. And the two things seem to be connected, not just over the past 40 years, but over the last century. There's a really strong correlation between economic inequality and political polarization, which the political scientists, although they've observed it, have not figured out the causes of. What I think is going on is where there is so much economic inequality in society, not just rich getting richer, poor getting poorer, but the top 1% or 0.1% getting richer as the middle class shrinks. People get really frustrated and cynical about our political system as it exists, and it fuels the rise of anti-system, anti-establishment candidates on both the right and the left. That, I think, is exactly what we're seeing right now.
I strongly support it, but I'd add two other things. I think the dog whistles of race and white privilege have a part to do with that, too, where there were groups of people who benefited from the political system simply because they were white. And now the political system is being stretched so that brown and black and yellow people have to be taken into consideration with that. I also think there's an external issue. The diminution of the democratic process by external forces who are introducing ideas and thoughts to our communities that say institutions and governments, it's all rigged against you. Yeah. And that's designed to destroy confidence in people have in the system. I think the last election clearly points to it. And there are playbooks that say, there's a book out now talking about no tyrants. And what they're talking about is these tyrants come along who need to destroy these systems in order for them to have their power. And there are institutions that are under threat in this country as a result of this playbook. The first one under threat is the press. To discredit the press and as a major equalizer in the political process is under threat. They also created one more thing, and I'll let it go. It's called silos of political thought. We call it polarization, but we have these silos of political thought, and people don't get outside of their silos. I watch Fox, or I watch CNN or MSNBC, and neither the two shall surpass. One of the things we had in the old days is we had four networks, and if you were going to get your news, you got your news from those four networks.
There's a downside to that, but the upside to that was that we were all singing from the same hymn book. We were all talking about the same set of facts and that kind of a thing.
Right.
There was some common ground, at least on what the basic facts are, which is to an alarming extent missing in today's political dialogue.
And all the redistricting boards in the world can't necessarily fix that. But that's what we're talking about today, is the impact of how congressional and legislative district lines are drawn and how that affects outcomes, not just at the ballot box, but, you know, once they start making laws in Ohio and inside the Beltway in Washington. If you have a question or comment about redistricting, whether it's congressional or legislative, legislative has changed, but it hasn't gone into effect yet. It will in 2021. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page. There are no such things as dumb questions. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about congressional redistricting. I know it might sound boring, but it's a fundamental issue that affects not only who populate the ballots in Ohio, but also whether or not there is any competition on the ballot. Although change is afoot for Ohio legislative races when new voter-approved rules and regulations go into effect in 2022, the outcomes of races in 2016 illustrate the issue. In nearly a quarter of races for the State House last November, voters didn't have a choice. Democrats had no candidate in 20 races, and Republicans had no candidates in 8 races. Still with us is election law expert and Ohio State University law professor Daniel Tokaji. Also with us, State Chair of Common Cause Ohio, Sam Gresham. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And we have updated the Ohio Congressional District map on our website at WOSU.org/all sides. If you want to go there and check it out, you can see how the districts are drawn. I call them tortured drawings. Anyone would agree with that. They don't seem to make any sense. But, you know, someone like Steve Stivers, I've talked to him, and he has said, I feel perfectly comfortable representing a district that reaches from Columbus to Athens to
Wilmington.
To yes. Wilmington, Ohio. He feels like he has a lot in common with those people. I mean, what do you say?
What do you say is that you took all of the effect of the urban community away from you. You have no responsibilities. Fine, you can represent those people, but is that a true depiction of that part of the country? And is it that you need to be accountable to more than one type of person in order to create this plurality that we think is important for democracy?
And remember what happened to Steve Stivers before in the last redistricting cycle, yeah. Right? He faced two very competitive elections against Mary Jo Kilroy. He won one of them. He lost one of them. So, of course, Representative Stivers is delighted with a district where he doesn't have to worry about a strong Democratic challenger, where he can be sure he's going to hold office unless somebody from the Tea Party challenges him in a primary. But there is no risk, virtually no risk, of his losing that election to a Democrat. It's not a competitive district anymore. So, of course, he's delighted. And, of course, no Republicans who benefit, Republican politicians, that is, who benefit from the system as it is right now, is going to try to come on and defend either the districts that exist or the system that we have for drawing districts, because both of those things are indefensible unless you look at it strictly in terms of their partisan self-interest.
There's no other way to support this map. There's no other way to support this system that we put in place, because there's no logic and there is no underpinnings of democratic thought. I mean, I would like if I was a Democratic candidate, I wouldn't mind competition because I think that keeps me sharp. I would not mind having a district that I have to represent all the people because it gives me a balance. The problem is, as has been pointed out by Dan and myself, is we have these districts so far to the left and so far to the right. As long as you stay on the right or the left, you have no challenge.
And there is no. And so people ask, why can't they get along in Congress? Why is Congress so ineffective, producing so little meaningful legislation in the last, 6 years, really? It's because there's no incentive.
Exactly.
Because they know they go back to their when they go to run for reelection, they're guaranteed reelection.
There is no incentive to compromise. We've seen it basically for the last 8 years. Under President Obama, when Republicans' incentives were to say no to everything President Obama wanted to do. And look, it paid off handily for them. They have commanding majorities in the House and a majority in the U.S. Senate as well. It paid off in state legislatures as well to oppose everything President Obama wanted to do. And we're seeing the same thing now from Democrats, right? Opposing everything that Donald Trump wants to do.
Except, because they're not worried about getting reelected either.
And the political payoff for Democrats right now is in opposing Donald Trump, right? They figure that the worse Donald Trump looks, the better they'll do in the elections next year. So the incentives right now are for Democrats, aside from keeping the government's lights on, right, not to cooperate on anything.
Dan is right in that posture, but I don't think that's a sustainable posture.
It's not. It's destructive. Yeah.
If you're voting against somebody, what are you voting for? Right. I hope they can put forth a plan, program, a communication process, a base of philosophy that attracts people. Now, an example of that I learned was Obamacare. And it was a hard lesson for me to learn. There were people who hated Obama, but when they found out what Obamacare really was and how it affected their lives, their disposition towards Obamacare and Obama significantly changed. I submit to you, as people find out what Congress is doing and not doing for them, there's going to be a shift. The silos will crumble in people's only best interest. The problem is they have to get the communication to understand what those differences are. I think over the long term, we're going to see a crumbling. I am optimistic. The silos will crumble.
We have an email from Amy. She says, I live in Perry County, which is former coal mining and big farming community. We lack jobs and education funding with a high unemployment rate, high public assistance, and high opioid problems. Our congressman is Steve Stivers from Upper Arlington, which is about 80 miles away and a world apart from us. He has only been here for fundraisers or superficial events because he doesn't need our votes. We had a veteran and farmer who is more like us, but he didn't stand a chance in this district. How do we get a representative who is representative of our community? And the answer to that is
what we're doing.
Yeah.
Changing the system.
Changing the system.
That's really a wonderful email because I think it perfectly captures the problem with the way we draw districts. And if you look more broadly, the problem with our political system as a whole. We've got counties in Ohio that are really suffering right now, that are just bleeding because of poverty, lack of jobs, and the opioid epidemic. And yet our elected officials are doing very, very little about these problems. I think this frustration is actually – a lot of these folks voted for Donald Trump because he promised to drain the swamp and bring the system down. But it's looking really questionable at the moment whether President Trump or our Congress are going to do anything to help these communities that are really suffering in Ohio and elsewhere.
John in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Sam. Huge fan. I'm a huge fan, by the way, both of you guys. So
you
do have fans out there. But I have a couple of points I'd like to make quickly. Often when you talk about gerrymandering, the pushback is, well, look at the results of the statewide elections. We're still run by Republicans. And so you know, the pushback is, you know, they don't buy that gerrymandering is affecting those elections. So I'll leave that, and we can discuss that. The other point that I would like to make is, if I'm a new person entering politics for the first time, until there is reform on district drawing, go where the game is. Run as a Republican, even if you grew up as an independent or a Democrat. Register and run as whatever that district designates you. Go where the fight is.
That's an interesting.
Run on ideas.
Yeah,
Run on ideas.
People have done that before. That's not novel, but it's unusual.
And the difficulty is the base of your philosophy may be diametrically opposed to the philosophy of the ruling political party in that district. And one thing would have to happen. Either you change your philosophy or they change their philosophy. And I don't think the latter is going to work. I think you would be constantly bumping up against whatever your philosophy is. If you took that, fine. But if you didn't, it would be difficult.
And then to get to John's first point about, well, the people who say, well, are all of our statewide is elected in Ohio are Republicans. So, but that's a function of the funding part of it, or the
it's partly,
campaign finances.
But at least with our statewide elections, right? I mean, nobody's saying that anyone has an entitlement to win those elections, but at least they're somewhat competitive, at least in some years, right? And
sometimes.
I think we're going to see competitive statewide elections next year, but we will see very few competitive legislative elections, either for Congress or state legislature in the next cycle. And look, I actually think based on the results of the last election, Republicans would probably control both houses of our state legislature as well as a majority of our congressional delegation, even with their districts. But you wouldn't have the two-thirds majority that Republicans have more than two-thirds in the Senate, in the state legislature, and then on the congressional side, three-quarters of our 16 congressional districts mm-hmm. are solid Republican districts because of the way that Democrats have been cracked and packed. You'd at least have some semblance of fairness and some competitive elections. That's what we're really talking about here.
John in Westerville, thanks a lot for that call. Jay in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I personally think there's a moral issue here, and I don't understand how Republicans at this point can sleep well at night knowing that they are intentionally depriving millions and millions of people all across the country of their right to be heard and represented. I mean, it obviously bastardizes democracy, but it's really as well a moral issue. To me, I think the best thing we could ever do would be to triple or quadruple the size of the House of Representatives and double the size of the Senate and dilute the power of each one of these people dramatically and force the creation of so many districts in the House of Representatives that essentially gerrymandering would be impossible. And it's about the only thing I agree with Donald Trump on is that we have a system of government that doesn't work very well. Unfortunately, he wants to make it into a kingdom, and I want to make it into a democracy.
Well, Jay makes, there's a point there, but, you know, when Democrats had a chance to change things, they didn't. They gambled and they lost. I mean, we would be entering into a period of big change if Democrats had passed the legislation back in 2010 when they could.
And it was right in front of them. But that presupposes that their moral reasoning is better than the Republicans. It's not.
No, it's not. It's not. And that's exactly it. That was the point. Even when they had a chance to change things, they chose not to. No one has the moral high ground when it comes to this issue.
No. And it's all greed and control and power. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. And, I didn't often agree with the late Justice Antonin Scalia, but he said one thing that I want to repeat here. The first instinct of power is the retention of power, and there's no area in which that better applies than redistricting, where the party that dominates wants to do everything they can to hold on to and indeed to increase their power. And even on the minority side, right, those Democrats who've got 70% or 80% Democratic districts, well, they don't want to give up those districts because these jobs in the U.S. House and even the state legislature, they're not bad jobs. And they at least get to hold on to their jobs, even if they don't have much real power beyond that.
Right.
Jay, thanks a lot for that call. We have an email from Jerry who writes, a recent ruling in Wisconsin ordered redistricting by 2018. I've been led to believe that the issues are similar to Ohio and that race was equated with partisan preference. Dan Tokaji, can you talk to me?
Yeah. So there's this very important case, probably the most important redistricting case that we've seen in decades, which is going up to the United States Supreme Court right now. It's called Gill versus Whitford. It arises out of the state of Wisconsin, which had a partisan gerrymandering that was just about as egregious, if not more so, if you can believe that, than the ones here in Ohio. A federal court, a three-judge federal court, said that this plan violated the United States Constitution, including both the Equal Protection Clause and the First Amendment, effectively because it diluted your vote depending on which party you support. That, you know, as is the case here, a Republican vote is in effect worth twice as much as a Democratic vote, roughly speaking, because of the way that the district lines are drawn. We'll see what the Supreme Court does on this. The key vote will certainly be that of Justice Kennedy.
We are out of time, but the issue persists, and we'll continue to cover it. Thanks to Sam Gresham, State Chair of Common Cause Ohio. Appreciate your time today, Sam.
Thank you.
Also, Daniel Tokaji, election law expert and OSU law professor. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for your emails. Thanks for your calls. And thanks especially for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.